Just a quick program note, this interview was recorded on location at the Lodge in Dayton, Kentucky, and you might hear some background noise or traffic sounds, just so you know. Welcome to Local Exposure, a podcast about music and the greater Cincinnati scene. I'm Jim Nolan. Since the early 1990s, John Curley, bass player for the Afghan Whigs, has been a great friend to the local music scene. And as operator of Ultra Suede Studio, has helped countless bands and musicians achieve their dreams of having their music recorded in a professional studio. In March of this year, John was forced to close up shop at Ultra Suede after 25 years, but quickly found that he had friends on the other side of the river who wanted to collaborate. By relocating to the Lodge in Dayton, Kentucky, John has found a new home for his talents, his passion, and his gear. Working alongside fellow musicians and recording enthusiasts John Warwick and Paul Brum, John Curley is enhancing the Lodge's growth and development as a state-of-the-art recording studio, as well as a performance and event space. I paid a visit to the Lodge and met with John Curley and Paul Brum to talk about gear, because engineers love to talk about gear, a few of the projects they've worked on, and some of John's favorite memories from Ultra Suede. Well, Paul, John, thanks for inviting me into your house at the Lodge.
Our pleasure.
John, I guess we'll start with you. You're the newest member of the Lodge recording community. Tell me about the transition that happened from Ultra Suede Records that brought you here to the Lodge.
Well, I had my studio space called Ultra Suede in the QCA building in Camp Washington. I moved in there in 1993 after being in a couple home studios and then a loft space in Northside at Hamilton and Blue Rock. And, late last year, the QCA building got sold and the new owner opted to not renew my lease. So I had to move out after 25 years. And I've known Paul for a long time. We've worked together on recording sessions and have played together on occasion. And I've known Scott through his photography and stuff, and Johnny Walker also through recording. And pretty much right when the news broke, Scott reached out to me and said, "Hey, we would love to have you come and you know, do stuff down here." And having known about this place and having been down here and knowing all these guys, it seemed like perfect.
Having been in that building for 25 years, I can only imagine the amount of stuff that you've accumulated.
Yeah.
How much of that is able to be moved from what was Ultra Suede to now into the Loft, or how much of it is I guess, that you don't need anymore because they already have stuff here?
I mean, I bought a lot of stuff that I thought would be cool to have in the studio and justified my kind of pack rat collecting by, "Oh, this will be nice to have in the studio. I'll maybe use it like once a year or something for something." I have a lot of stuff that's not really that useful, but still has sentimental value. I brought a lot of the working day-to-day gear down here with me, a lot of the outboard gear, microphones, things that we could all use. And Paul's been hooking it up into the existing system and integrating it with their system that they already had that was working fine. So I feel like we've just improved what was already a good thing. But I've still got a whole storage space full of stuff that I'm like working through the psychic process of saying goodbye to before I can unload it on eBay. It's hard because a lot of the stuff is like, it's valuable to me, but it's not valuable. So it's kind of like, I'd almost rather find somebody, a like-minded person, to just give it away to than just sell it for, you know, way less than I think it's worth. And if you know, anybody who's ever gone online to buy a guitar, I mean, you just look at people's crappy guitars that they want way too much money for, and it's a natural phenomenon.
But you're right, it's predominantly sentimental value.
To a large extent, you know.
Well, Paul, tell me a little bit about your history and how you came to be at the Lodge.
Well, Scott got the building in 2013, and I've been here pretty much since the beginning, but we didn't really start doing a lot of recording until maybe about 3 years ago. Johnny, as you mentioned, Johnny Warwick Walker, we and Scott and I had kind of partnered together to put together a studio, basically. It would just be still a pile of gear up here if it weren't for me, like, hooking it all up, because it was, they bought a Neotech Elite console and some other stuff, and nobody had any idea other than just getting it up here what to do with it after that. So we've been just ever since, you know, 2014 or so, improving a little bit at a time, wiring more of the building for audio, and doing more events, more live events. My background, personally, I played in a number of different bands in the area and had done recording at Ultra Suede a few sessions, as well as other places around town, and had my own studio down on Main Street in my apartment for a long time, where I actually did some bands, you know, a little more guerrilla style stuff, you know, in some cases, or I'd go to people's spaces and bring a reel-to-reel machine. And I just always liked being under a pair of headphones with the band more than being in a control room where you can't always feel like you're part of the process as much. So I feel like here we have a good blend of approaches. We can get very clinical and very clean about things, or we can get a little bit more free with it and still get a lot of interesting different results.
How much of the equipment is purely digital? How much of it is vintage analog? And is it a mix of both, and you can use different ones to get different sounds?
We do have a lot of analog equipment, not a lot of which I would call vintage per se, meaning not much of it is much older than 1980 or so. But that is technically, I guess, vintage, you know, 80s gear now, right? But, I mean, I'm thinking like older than that. We don't have any fancy old microphones or anything, but we have a lot of nice newer microphones, for example, you know, that are similar. And so we're blending. We've got, a Macintosh. We've got a modern type recording system. We also do some tape, both on the recording side and on the mixing side, you know. And then, like I said, we have a Neotech Elite analog console that we mix through and record through. A lot of nice external preamps, mic preamps, one of which is my own design, and then a bunch of which John has just added to our lovely mix over here. So we have, like, 24 nice channels of mic preamps of different flavors. So, you know, some of the gear is as old as maybe 1981 or so, and then everything else is, you know, something newer. And we're definitely blending digital and analog throughout the process in various ways. Sometimes when I'm mixing, I'm using the hardware pieces as opposed to the computer plugins, for example, for compressing or that kind of stuff.
Now, when you say your own design, are you actually soldering circuits?
Yeah, and the black unit on top of the further away rack is a 4-channel tube mic preamp that I made about 15 years ago. And I'm very proud of it. I mean, otherwise I wouldn't mention it. It actually turned out really well. But it took a lot of time. It was back when I had time to devote to it all, you know. And I've refined the design a little bit since then. But yeah, so I like building gear, repairing gear, tube gear in particular. And so we've done a little of that even, you know, customizing and changing things that are here.
Now, is this just trial and error how you learn how to do things? Or did you go to a school to learn this? Or?
I studied some other technical stuff in school, but no, I mean, you can't really, that I know of, go to school to study tube circuits anymore since, like, you know, maybe the late 60s. So, I mean, pretty much all of it you're picking up from books and from, you know, teaching yourself with the help of other people online and that. I grew up in a musical family. We just always had gear around the house, so I've been doing it for a long, long time, you know, just tearing things apart and learning how they work.
Now, John, obviously, most people know you from your time with the Afghan Whigs, a band that you're still touring with.
Right.
How did you make the transition from performing musician to recording?
You know, for me, they were always kind of two complementary interests that I had. I was really into music and gear at a young age. So the two things always just kind of fed each other. As I got a little older and picked up the bass guitar, I got interested in recording. I got my first 4-track, and, you know, the two things always just kind of went hand in hand.
You spent 25 years at Ultra Suede. You recorded tons of music, predominantly local music. You've always been
mostly a big
cheerleader for the local music scene. Are there any specific memories that stand out in that quarter century that you've spent recording local music?
I mean, yeah, a couple. They usually don't have much to do with the music, though. You know, I can remember, like, when the Ass Ponies were recording, we got really into making prank phone calls, and we set up this elaborate rig where we could make prank phone calls from the actual studio, so the person could sit out in the studio room and be completely focused and not distracted by the laughter of the rest of us, and we could use all the effects and, like, add reverb and change the voices and stuff like that. We had a lot of fun doing those. I can remember, like, there was a session with Pearlene when they were making their record for Western Violence and Sensuality, which they did a reunion show for just this past Christmas at the Northside Tavern. But like, they did that pretty much live, and just sitting in the control room and watching that happen and just feeling like it was, you know, a concert where I was the only person in the audience. A lot of memories like that, just watching like Chuck and Lisa from Wussy record their vocals, getting to have the Afghan Whigs in there. Like, we rehearsed and wrote most of the album Black Love in that studio, recorded a song for Due to the Beast, which was our reunion album in 2013, I guess. Yeah, just a lot of stuff. I mean, it was a huge part of my life. It was weird and difficult and emotional to go in there. I mean, I only really got a month's notice to clear out. And, you know, so I was just in there literally like every day just going through stuff. You know, the gear was easy. That was the last of what we took out of there, because people were using it up until the very last day. So, I mean, there was a session in there the day before we came in with the U-Haul truck and, you know, unplugged everything and pulled it out. So mostly I was going through just stuff, 25 years worth of memories, and finding like the toys of my daughters from when they were little kids and playing there after school while I was mixing stuff. And yeah.
Were the Whigs the first band that you recorded?
Probably one of the first bands I recorded. I had no idea what I was doing either. I saw pictures of recording sessions, so I made it look like pictures that I had seen. And then, you know, we'd listen to it back, and Greg and I would just look at each other, and he was like, you know, this doesn't sound right. And I was like, yeah, well, how do you, you know, this doesn't sound like stuff you hear on the radio. And, you know, it was a long learning curve to really understand how to make records, how to record stuff, how to mix stuff, how to mic things and arrange things. And occasionally here and there, a song wound up on a record that we did at my studio, but by and large, we went to other studios on the label budget and, you know, had big recording sessions in places like Arden and Memphis and Kingsway and New Orleans, studios in Seattle. That was where I learned a lot. You know, I would take the little bit that I knew and then watch these people that really knew what they were doing, and you know, I feel like I got a free education from that, you know, just by paying attention and watching how they did it. And it was cool, because in a lot of ways that was exactly the same way I was doing it, but in other ways there were important differences that I was able to pick up and take back with me.
And you said there was a session the night before you went to start moving out. Who was the last band that you recorded Ultra Suede?
It was a John Hoffman session that he was working on, and it was kind of a crazy time, but I know him and Jerry Westerkamp were in there recording and mixing, and, you know, I'm like, are you using this cable, are you using this thing, or I'm unscrewing it, and, you know, no, not that one. It was madness.
Well, you brought up John. I want to ask you about the crew at Ultra Suede, because you've worked with some really incredible people, mixing, mastering, engineering, and probably learning a lot from you, but also bringing their own skills and their own talents to the table. Tell me about some of the folks that you worked with at Ultra Suede.
You know, when it started, it was mostly me and Dave Davis, who later went on to become kind of our house mastering engineer, and he still does a lot of mastering stuff here in Cincinnati through QCA, who was my landlord the whole time I was renting the space at Ultra Suede. It was their QCA Studio A. And then we threw in with a couple other guys who were mostly live sound guys, Gary Schell and Sean Norton, who were doing a lot of the live sound in and around Short Vine. Sean later did all the stuff down at the Southgate House for years, and then when the Southgate House moved, he did stuff down there for a while. I think he's retired now. Gary still does sound at Motor and the Woodward and occasional recording. And then Steve Girton, who was the Whig sound guy, was part of Ultra Suede, and we still work together. He was doing stuff right up until the end as well. A guy named Chris Colte, who worked there for a while, who did a lot of bands and eventually moved to Detroit and opened his own studio and has had a pretty amazing career of his own since then. built a studio from scratch, you know, on a block in Detroit that he chose very well. It's one of the ones that's had a real renaissance. Great studio, really cool place. And then more in recent years, you know, Paul has done sessions down there. A handful of people that would come in from time to time and do stuff. John Hoffman and Jerry Westerkamp from Vacation. Jerry was in the Tweens, and John's played in a bunch of bands, and they're in Vacation together now, and John's also in Swim Team. But those guys started doing stuff, and they did the last two Wussy records, and they do a lot of touring. They were bringing in a lot of bands from other cities and really starting to do a lot of stuff. The last time I wanted to record my band, the band called the Plastic Ants that I play with here in town, I had to wait 3 weeks to book a session at my own studio because they were doing so much stuff. So yeah, it was an unfortunate time to close.
Well, Paul, let's bring it back to you. Tell me about some of the bands that you've recorded here at the Lodge.
We've had a lot of... I mean, as time has gone on, we've had more and more sessions. I'd say in the last year and a half, we've had more than probably the 3 years before that or whatever. So it's good that it's been picking up. We've done some really cool live events. Most recently, the last thing we did here was a Shakespeare podcast, which, so it was like 13 actors on 6 different microphones, and it was interesting. And there was a couple of musicians involved, and then a little live audience as well. So it's like having a bigger room, you know. We've done some actual just full-on live shows that we've recorded, you know, where there's 100 or more people downstairs. As far as specific bands, I mean, there's Arlo McKinley and the Lonesome Sound record that we're currently working on getting finished. It sounds really awesome, I think, that we started this March. I did a project for the Queen City Kings. It's a local ensemble that does music strictly from the King Records catalog, and so they've got some strong local preservationist-minded stuff going on there that's really cool. I know John's already doing stuff. John Hoffman, who we've been talking about, he's already doing some sessions here as well now. So he's kind of come along with John Curley here to be part of our Lodge team. And I know he's always got a lot of interesting acts he's bringing in.
Well, I also want to ask you about The Blue Room.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a performance space that happens to also have a recording studio attached to it, which makes it very unique for this area.
Well, it's an event space as much as it is a recording studio. And we can do the two things separately or together, you know. And so we've got the ability to do nice controlled sound up here, even with people in the room downstairs and whatever else. It's modeled a little bit after maybe there are some venues in Europe, or like Third Man is similar in Detroit, where they'll do live to tape recordings, you know, of a show with a bunch of people essentially in like a big garage or whatever. This room, I think we have a little more treatment. It's a little more tamed down for audio and that, so we can do quieter stuff, you know, which is really nice. Recently we had Del Marsalis brought his brass band in here. They're called the Uptown Jazz Orchestra for just a rehearsal. I was hoping they were going to do a session, but it turned out to just be a rehearsal. But anyway, we had these awesome horns downstairs, all just playing acoustic volume. I had like 5 mics, and we got some amazing sounds just, you know, based on we've got enough nice sounding stuff that we can get away with, almost like more like a classical or jazz type recording where you're only using just a few really nice mics to try to capture a whole ensemble, which is hard to do in most smaller studios or even a bigger room that doesn't have any treatment at all. You know, you just get wash or whatever, you know. So I've really been impressed with the range of stuff we've been able to do. It's relatively easy to do loud rock music with amps and stuff, but getting an ensemble of horns, brass in particular, to sound good without individual miking is really a challenging, I think, thing to pull off without it sounding like a marching band in a gym, you know.
I would say one of the exciting things about being part of this thing down at the Lodge is just the opportunity to do a lot of other stuff beyond, you know, just recording music. The event space is a great example, being able to have a show that you can also make a professional multi-track recording of. But, you know, we do all kinds of other stuff here too. There's screen printing in the basement. We have a drawing class here that uses the downstairs space for figure drawing. Was it like once a week?
Mm-hmm. It's once a month.
Once a month.
Second Tuesday.
Well, and not to mention Scott Basler, who is a phenomenal photographer.
Yeah, he's shot.
Yeah.
And he's shot tons and tons of bands too. He's got a lot of local music knowledge of his own.
But, you know, just having the ability to provide lots of different services for bands or for anybody, and being a part of a larger creative community that's, you know, wider than bands making records, which is awesome. I love that. But it's the idea of being in a creative incubator with all kinds of other people doing other things is really exciting.
Well, that brings up another question. I know in the past you had live from Ultra Suede performances, I think, on YouTube.
Yeah.
Are you hoping to continue something like that here?
Yeah, we would love to. I learned from that it's a huge commitment to do that and quite a bit of work. One of the things that was hard about doing it at Ultra Suede was we got rid of our analog mixing board a while ago, and we're strictly digital. And it's really hard to live mix anything digitally. You kind of have to just record it and then go back and mix it, you know, in the box, as they say. We have a board here where we can mix on the fly and do stuff. So I feel like that really lends a big part to potential streaming. But yeah, having the cameras, having the internet bandwidth, having the the spare computers for doing the video, it's literally like two whole separate operations. And, it was fun to do it at Ultra Suede, but it wasn't something that we could sustain without a corporate partner. WCPO wound up just kind of doing their own thing along those lines with Brian Neese, who actually, I feel terrible, I neglected to mention him. He was a huge part of Ultra Suede, did a lot of sessions down there with like Barents Whitfield and the Savages. He engineered wig sessions from time to time. Did a bunch of recording down there. So, Brian, I apologize. But, yeah, he does all the WCPO live stuff down there and has done a great job with that.
It sounds like you two are incredibly busy. I appreciate you giving me some time to come and visit and talk to you. If there are local bands out there that are looking for a place to record and or perform, what should they do to reach out to you guys?
You can go to the Lodge website. It's probably the easiest way. LodgeKY.com.
Mm-hmm. If you go to info@LodgeKY, if you email info, that goes straight to me personally.
And you can accommodate, sounds like, bands of pretty much any size whatsoever, any style, any genre, any whatever.
I would say so. I've yet to find one we couldn't, so, you know, I'm willing to give it a shot.
Well, Paul, John, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
If you're curious about some of the space and gear and talent that the Lodge in Dayton, Kentucky has available for your next event, concert, or recording session, you can find links to their website and photos, including a picture of Paul's custom-built preamp. All of it is at wvxu.org/lx. Local Exposure is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio and 91.7 WVXU. The theme music for this episode is by Scott Holmes and comes from the Free Music Archive. Find out more at freemusicarchive.com. Today's episode was recorded and produced by me, Jim Nolan, and I just want to say, as always, thank you very much for listening. Until next time.